Our guest on the Hubcast today developed an eye for interior design watching her mother, an antiques dealer and interior designer, transform the period homes of her childhood. Today's guest had a lengthy career in communication, marketing and PR for high-end lifestyle brands before following her passion for interior design just 2 years ago. Let's find out how she made the move. Welcome to the Hubcast, brought to you by the Interior Designers Hub, where we help and support interior designers to get trained, get into the industry, and to grow wildly successful businesses. If you want to work in the field you love, create the lifestyle you desire, and make the money you truly deserve, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Kate Hatherall. Let's get into it. Back to another episode of the podcast, and today I am really excited to welcome Charlotte Thomas of Charlotte Thomas Studios Limited. How are you, Charlotte? Welcome.
Hi, Kate. I'm really well, thank you, and I'm so happy to be here. I've listened to quite a few of your podcasts and I find them really interesting, so thank you for inviting me.
Not at all. We're really pleased to have you on and really looking forward to hearing your journey into interior design. So tell me a little bit about the studio and that you run now and the work that you do.
So my business really specializes in transforming period homes, particularly in the area that I live in, which is South Oxfordshire. But because I've spent a lot of time in London, living in London in period homes as well, I also work in that area too.
Amazing. And how long have you been up and running?
I've been up and running for almost 2 years now.
Brilliant. Okay, so up and running for 2 years. And so have you had a whole other kind of career or several careers before you got to this point?
Well, I've had one big career, as you can imagine, which was specialising in communications for high-end lifestyle brands. So all categories, really, from alcohol to fashion, a lot of fashion, homewares very usefully, auction houses, cars, pretty much anything, but at a top level. So a level of quality, exclusivity to a point, and often British heritage brands, actually. I seem to have naturally fallen into that speciality subject, which, as you can imagine, having now transitioned into interior design, is all very useful.
Amazing, I can imagine. And also that kind of brand exposure that you must have had, so that kind of product awareness throughout your previous career as well.
Absolutely. I think it makes the fact that I specialise in period houses really make sense. I suppose it was just a natural, obvious thing for me to do. It wouldn't have made sense to have done anything else, really, because I understand quality, I understand heritage, history, the stories behind a brand, a house, you know, all these things just kind of play into what I'm doing now, which is, it's just made actually quite a seamless transition, to be honest.
I love that. There's some a speech that was done by Steve Jobs. I think it was his, was it a Harvard speech? And he talked about that you don't ever understand how the connections are made. It's only when you look back that you can see how joined up, and it's so that kind of been true for you.
So interesting and so true. And actually, I think a lot of it comes back to the fact that when I was growing up, my parents always gravitated towards old houses, and because my mum was an English antiques dealer, and then she had her own shop in Tunbridge Wells, and then became an interior designer. So I'm second generation, which is always nice. I lived in really pretty houses that were, when we first bought them, complete wrecks a lot of the time. My mum would always find the worst house on the best street, that kind of thing. And have a great time doing them up and then think, oh, okay, I've done that now, a bit bored, let's move house. So I ended up with bedrooms to do for myself, which was always quite fun. I didn't mind moving house at all.
Amazing. And I guess you must have kind of absorbed that, even if it wasn't consciously, throughout your childhood, seeing how schemes were put together.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's exactly what I realised had happened. And of course, as I was going through my communications, marketing and PR career for so many years, I hadn't realised that I just had this kind of natural ability, the eye or whatever it is, or the gut feeling to put colours and textures and shapes and, you know, to understand the light, all of those things. Just, is naturally in me. And that's such an advantage. So I'm so glad I've now realized that I can actually take advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's actually stuff that you've absorbed throughout, you know, a lifetime of having had those experiences.
Absolutely.
So thinking back then, obviously you didn't go into interior design back when you were starting your career. Has interior design been something that you've realized more recently as an area you want to move into, or has it been something that's kind of been a passion that you've always pursued?
It's always been there, to be honest. And I think this happens with a lot of people. I've noticed even on your previous podcasts, your guests have said things like, when I was a child, I used to play around with the layout in my room, or, you know, change the cushions a lot or whatever. I obviously was surrounded by all of this interior design and antiques lifestyle that my mother was creating. So, yes, it seeped into my soul, I suppose. But certainly when I bought my first ever flat in London, I remember thinking, oh, my goodness, this is heaven. I now have free rein to do what on earth I want to these however many, not many, rooms I had. And it was so exciting. And I realized then that I had a real love and quite a confident love of color, not in a garish way, but kind of earthy colors, muted tones, natural. And I mean, I remember painting my sitting room chocolate brown, which, of course, this year is terribly trendy, but I was slightly before my time, maybe, I don't know. But I just had such a wonderful time, and I found a wrapping paper in Paper Chase on Tottenham Court Road that was a lizard skin textured white wrapping paper with grey veins in it. And I remember buying the last 50 sheets and taking it home to the decorator. Can you use this in the loo, please? And he was horrified.
Amazing. Oh, I love that. I love that. And you look back at the stories of kind of, you know, your earlier sort of forays into it. And I remember that myself entirely. I mean, I was at university and I was allowed to decorate my my house, my student rented house, and the landlord didn't mind at all. And I look back now and I think, I wish that I'd had your lovely taste for colour, because I think I painted the walls in some kind of garish orange.
Oh my goodness.
The landlord must have gone around with magnolia afterwards.
How funny, good old magnolia saves the day.
So it's obviously always been sort of within you, and you've had, you know, a kind of natural inclination for it, a desire to do that. Is there a reason that you didn't go into, studying interior design back at the point you were starting your career? Was it a conscious decision not to do that?
No, it wasn't conscious. I suppose I felt, because it was so much part of my life, I almost didn't need to make a career of it. Not that I didn't need to study, because actually when I did decide a few years ago to take it seriously and to make it my profession, I did take myself off and I did get qualified, because I didn't want to be one of those people who says, oh, my mom's an interior designer, I'm so natural. I don't think that really is authentic. I think you have to, you know, really know what you're talking about. It's a responsibility, isn't it? You're working on your client's most valuable asset, and it's their place of refuge. So you've got to be really good. You've got to know what you're doing. So I did go off and get qualified.
Amazing. And did you then decide that this was like the thing that you had your heart set on, that you were focusing on this one thing in its entirety, and you're kind of ploughing all of your efforts into that?
Yes. When it happened, when I decided to set up my own business, I decided that, in fact, it was something I heard on Dragon's Den once, when one of the dragons said to one of the quivering wrecks who was doing their presentation to them, you have to give up everything and focus on your one dream, the thing that you really believe in, because otherwise you're not showing that you really believe in it. I think that's a little bit harsh, because obviously you need to be in a financial situation where you can do that, because otherwise it's a risk. But for me, I actually was willing to take that risk, because I had got to a point in my life where I just thought, I'm not actually happy and fulfilled and fueled by communications and marketing as I had been before. Partly, I think, because I'd never really explored the very creative side of myself, but also because over the years, obviously, marketing has become, dare I say it, slightly less creative, slightly less person to person, and much more Excel spreadsheet data analytics driven, which is all very well and obviously progress, but it doesn't play to what lights my fire.
Yeah, so I guess less creative than you would like it to be.
Yeah, exactly.
And so was that a gradual realization that you were moving away from the marketing, communications and PR? Or was it just one day you were like, no, I've had enough of this now, I need to make a change?
It's funny because actually in my memory, it feels like a combination of both. Okay. What actually happened was I realized over time that every time we moved house, we favored old houses. And actually a little bit like my mother had done, she'd always gone for the worst house in the best street and taken on the hell of doing it up from scratch and re-roofing and goodness knows what. And some of the, two of the houses that I ended up buying with my husband were grade two listed houses. And that all sounds terribly extravagant and expensive. But actually, if you do buy a listed building in a bit of a wreck state, it can become something utterly beautiful and obviously much more valuable, but it's a real project. And because I was doing more and more of those for us, I obviously learned so much along that journey. And then, of course, you know, my friends coming around, I'm quite social, like having dinner parties, and they would see all this. And they often said, oh, Charlotte, you know, when I'm doing my house that I'm about to buy, will you come over and we can go through not just fabrics, but, you know, how we're going to use the space and which room should be used for what purpose and all the rest of it. And, you know, they always used to say and continue to say, you've got the eye. I want my house to feel like yours, because it actually doesn't look like it's interior designed, you know, from a textbook. It looks lived in. It shows my personality. It's comfortable, unpretentious, you know, all those things that we kind of want for our own homes. And so time and again, I was getting loads of experience working for friends. I mean, obviously for free, because I was officially a marketing person. But then one day, a great friend of mine came to me and said, listen, we've got this house in the Cotswolds. It's quite big. It's a little bit overwhelming for me to do it on my own. I know the kind of colours and fabrics and things I like, but would you come and hold my hand, as it were, and give me confidence to make the right decisions so I don't mess it up and look like a fool? And because I value what you're going to bring to this, I'm going to pay you your hourly marketing rate. And I was so struck by that. And I thought, wow, this is serious. My friends actually really value what I can do. And I'm not even trained yet. So I did that job. It was six bedrooms. We only did the first floor. We're doing the ground floor next year. It was amazing. And she was so, or the whole family was so happy. And it gave me the confidence. I thought, okay, I kind of can do this. And I'd done it in a professional way as a project. I'd managed the project properly and the trades and all the rest of it. And then another friend, she recommended me to a friend of hers. And then I did her house. And then somebody said to me, Charlotte, what are you doing? You're spending more time doing interior design, because I was running my own marketing consultancy at the time. And you're so much happier now. You're so much more yourself.
Wow.
Do it properly.
That's amazing. And you know, one of the best things that I just heard you say as well is that your friends used to come round and they would say that it was about how the home made them feel. It wasn't that you made it look nice, although I'm sure that's, you know, what also there, but the feeling that you created with it as well. It was that feeling that they wanted to get.
Completely. And actually, that's one of the first questions I ask my clients now. Obviously, having taken into consideration the architecture, the history, the setting of the property first, I always say, okay, so with this room, how do you want to feel and how do you want your visitors to feel when they come into this room? And what purpose is it going to be used for throughout the day? Because obviously that could change as well. And feelings are so, I mean, it's really all about that, isn't it? It's about the emotion of it and how happy and content and secure your home can make you feel. And let's face it, the big wide world is quite a stressful place, particularly at the moment. And if your house isn't a refuge, a sanctuary, then you're probably going to be quite stressed.
I love that. I love that. Absolutely. So that moment where obviously you're now beginning to get people really kind of taking your skill set seriously, was there a moment where you were like, okay, now I'm going to kiss goodbye to the PR and marketing? Was it like an abrupt kind of, I'm stopping that and I'm starting this? Or was there kind of an overlap with them?
There had to be a bit of an overlap because I had two clients at the time. And obviously I had a contract, so I was on however many months' notice. But one of them was a startup, and it would have been wrong of me to have just said, okay, I'm off, I've changed my mind. Yeah. So I honored that, and I supported them until they didn't need me anymore. And I was only ever employed for the beginning of it anyway, so that was fine. But I had it in my mind very clearly that if I wanted this business to be a success, and it needs to be a commercial success for me, it's not just something I'm doing on my kitchen table for the hobby, that I really needed to put everything into it. And a lot, as you know, of being an entrepreneur is there are never enough hours in the day. So there's no way I could do the marketing as well. And I've got two children and, you know, and life.
Amazing. So looking at that kind of journey, and, you know, you've got to where you are now, which is fantastic. And you're clearly, you know, loving it and bringing, you know, all of those lovely feelings into what you do. But was it always easy, or were there obstacles, fears and worries along the way?
Gosh, I love the way you talk about it in the past tense. I think it's still ongoing. You know, I still feel like a newbie. I don't have the imposter syndrome, weirdly. And I followed your ID Hub. So I've gone through all of your amazing learnings that have really given me confidence and made me feel less alone while setting up the business. So thank you for that. It really has been valuable. But I was never the imposter Imogen. And maybe that's because I grew up with it all and it's kind of in my blood. So it gave me that confidence. But what I did find was, and this is really a tip I'd give somebody who is starting out or now or moving from another career, is nobody's perfect at being a business person or being an interior designer. So you need to be quite mindful about what really gives you pleasure. And usually if you enjoy something, you're good at it. And what you shy away from and kind of put, it's on your to-do list, but it always recurs every day because it was bored. Those jobs, I've realized, if only I'd got somebody to do them, even if I'd had to pay them, obviously I would have, sooner, it would have made me less overwhelmed, because you do get overwhelmed at a certain point. And it shouldn't be a kind of overwhelming breaking point. It should be before that. And actually, that's the advice you gave me when we met at Decorex just last month. You said, I said, oh, I'm a bit overwhelmed, you know, this, that and the other. And, you know, all the bookkeeping you have to do, I can do the rest of it, but the bookkeeping, it's so boring to me. And you said, well, okay, well, you need to get somebody to help you. You need a remote assistant or a virtual assistant or whatever. But my advice to you and to everybody is to think of this in advance. Try and get somebody before you really feel you need them. And that's such brilliant advice.
And I also think as well that people are too late to outsource things, and that you need to kind of identify quite early on, A, as you said, the things that you enjoy doing, the things that you don't enjoy doing, exactly as you said, those things that, you know, languish on your to-do list and always get pushed to the bottom. But actually, the sooner that you identify those things and the sooner that you outsource, the more time that that gives you to, for you to be in, you know, what they call your zone of genius, you know, but really it's the work that makes you happy, the work that lights you up, because that's what's going to sell your business for you.
Totally. And I think that also really comes across, because before I got to the point of almost being overwhelmed by the bookkeeping, I was really light and bright and myself. I'm a very upbeat, positive, enthusiastic, energetic person. And that definitely comes across in my conversations with my clients at every stage of the project. I've always got the energy for it because I love it so much, because I love people. So that combination really rubs off on them and they get energized and everything's great. But when I got to near that point, I remember feeling quite sapped of energy. And I really was aware of that. And I thought, whoa, hang on a second. Maybe this is one of the reasons why so many businesses in the first few years fail. Because you suddenly feel like you have no energy. You're not quite sure which direction to go in. But actually, you were on the right track in the first place. It's just you needed a bit of help.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, by outsourcing that stuff, it frees you up to be in that energy. And people say, don't they, but if it feels heavy, then there's something not right. Because if you're doing a passion career, which this is for most people that are in the industry, you know, there's hardly any industry that's parents insisted they became interior designers. But if you're in here, it's because you're passionate about it. And you need to remember that if you're passionate about something, it should feel light. And when it starts to feel heavy, that's the time to jettison something that isn't right.
That's a really good thing to continue to watch, I think, throughout my journey, as it were, because, you know, as I was saying, it's very much, you know, I still feel it's in its infancy. I mean, yes, it's going extraordinarily well, much better than I was ever expecting, which is wonderful. I'm really lucky. But I think you have to keep watching yourself and being mindful of what feels light and what feels heavy and doing something about it, not putting your head in the sand and hoping it's all going to go away. Because of course it's not. It's just going to pile up and get worse and then possibly overwhelm you and make your business fail, because it's at that point you're going to lose confidence and say, oh, maybe I should never have done this in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking back on your journey, if you could travel back in time to go and meet the younger you, is there any advice that you would give yourself about the journey that you were about to embark upon? Or do you regret not having started earlier? Like, if you could go dial back the time, what would you do things differently?
Well, firstly, I would be more aware of my weaknesses, not so much weaknesses, but things I don't like doing, the heavy things, as we were just talking about, and get help. Even if it was, you know, obviously you'd have to invest in paying somebody to do that. And that always, I think, trips people up when you think, oh, I'm not at a point in my business where I can afford it yet. You can afford it, because it could actually save your business and make it successful. So definitely that. I think the other thing that I do is, because I think I'm naturally quite confident, but I think sometimes I feel that a decision is just too big to be made, even though I know the answer, as in I know the right thing to do, but it's just a little bit scary. I just sometimes think, well, how much easier would my life be and this particular job in my career be if I wasn't like this, if I didn't feel overwhelmed, if I wasn't an overthinker? And so I actually just flick a switch in my head and I just think, I'm just going to do it.
Wouldn't it be nice to be able to do that?
Well, I kind of can. It's really strange. I kind of numb myself to the situation because I've already made the conscious decision, or rather the intellectual decision, I suppose, that it's, I'm going to do this. But then all the voices come in and the fear and all the rest of it. And so now I just don't listen to those voices. I just do it because I know it's the right thing, even though it's scary.
That's amazing. And it's almost like that, feel the fear, but do it anyway.
Gosh, yes, you're so right. That book, I remember that book.
Yeah, absolutely.
So true. It's absolutely, it sounds possibly a little bit crazy, but I think you always have a gut feeling. And if you use a little bit of intellect and your experience as well and make the right decision, don't then listen to all the overthinking voices in your head, because that's when it all goes wrong. Just stop thinking. Just do it.
Just stop thinking. That's going to be our takeaway from today.
Not in every situation.
Charlotte, that's been so helpful to hear your journey into interior design and how you've, you know, made it into the industry now, doing something that you're clearly very talented at and something that you love as well. So thank you for sharing that with us today.
Well, that's so kind of you to say. I've really enjoyed talking about it and talking to you and hearing your thoughts on the whole process. Thank you.
Charlotte, before you go, would you be happy to play a game of designer this or that?
Of course I would. I'm dying to do it.
Amazing. I'm going to put 1 minute on the clock and then I'm going to give you some choices. Are you ready?
I think so.
Scandi or boho?
Scandi.
Formal or casual?
Casual.
Neutral or colourful?
Colourful.
Leather or vegan?
Leather.
Floral or plain?
Floral.
Art deco or pop art?
Neither.
Not an option, you have to choose one.
Oh my goodness, art deco.
Plumping cushions or karate chopping cushions?
Plumping, casually.
Not sure that's allowed. Brand paints or colour matched?
Well, colour matched, actually.
George Clark or Kevin MacLeod?
George Clark.
Brushed chrome or shiny chrome?
Brushed if I have to.
Carpet or hard flooring?
Hard flooring.
Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen or Kelly Hoppen?
Kelly Hoppen.
And we are out of time. Amazing. Thank you very much for playing Designer This or That.
My pleasure. That was fun.
Okay, Charlotte, that brings us to the end of today's Hubcast. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your journey. It's been amazing to hear how you've got to where you are. And obviously, we wish you all of the success as you move forwards with your business as well.
Thank you so much. Could I just mention my Instagram? Because I'm slightly obsessed with Instagram.
Absolutely. Yes, please. Tell us how we can get in touch with you.
So my handle is at, of course, Charlotte Thomas Studio. It's all very logical. And actually from there, my website is the same, charlottethomasstudio.com.
Amazing. So guys, go and check out Charlotte if you live in that area and need some help with your interior design. Amazing. Thanks so much again.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into Hubcast by the Interior Designers Hub. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please take a screenshot and share it to Facebook, Instagram, or your favourite social media channel. Make sure to tag me in at Interior Designers Hub and let me know what you enjoyed about this episode. I reply to each and every comment. I'd also like to offer you an incredible free gift, which is going to show you the exact roadmap that you need to take to become a wildly successful interior designer. It shares our secrets to business success. If you'd like to get your hands on that, head on over to interiordesignershub.co.uk/roadmap right now. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.